Rocha. To Moore. And it's off the woodwork!
Hello, world. Welcome to Off the Woodwork. I'm Zach Rocha, joined by Jason Moore. Let's get right into it, Jason. This week, we're going to talk about the new cover of FIFA 15 and who's on it. We're going to get into American soccer, the transition from the World Cup back to our domestic league. We're going to talk about Manchester United's new coach and new formation and a bunch of other topics related to soccer, football, futebol, foosball, futsal, indoor soccer. There's so many different names for it. Anyway, but Jason, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Zach.
So the FIFA 15 cover is featuring the guy who we featured quite a bit on last week's episode, the Golden Ball winner at the World Cup, Lionel Messi. He's on the worldwide cover once again. And here in America, it's going to be Clint Dempsey. Your thoughts?
Well, obviously, I'm pretty, I wouldn't say close to Clint Dempsey, but, you know, he's good friends with my brother, played in the league. And he's proven himself, you know. He was with the Revs right as I was leaving. He was coming in. So I kind of saw his, you know, his continuation to play and go over to Fulham and everything. So it's something I think he's earned. And to be side by side with Messi, I think, is quite an honor. Just to, you know, with the North American part of the game, he's, I think there's nobody else you could put there unless you were going to put like a Tim Howard or somebody like that.
True, true. I mean, Clint is the captain of the team. Jurgen made that decision over a year ago. And Clint seems like a pretty good ambassador for the American soccer model. And it's definitely exciting to have him on the cover. I guess there was no Canadian we could really put on there. I think Chicharito has been on in the past to represent the Mexican side for North America.
The last U.S., I think, was Donovan.
Was it?
I want to say 2011.
Yep.
So
it's a new day here for video games and American soccer. And FIFA 15 won't come out till late September. But, you know, video games have really changed the way we kind of see the game. And I do want to talk about this a little bit, if you wouldn't mind. And
yeah. And
let's get into, you know, the great value that video games can provide children and even coaches in this day and age. You know, it's become so advanced that you can actually do some practice corner kicks or practice free kicks if you're a coach within the video game model and actually use those on the field. And I don't think I'm talking crazy about this. I know there's certain coaches who actually use this in the professional ranks and the college ranks and use it as an actual system and model to teach their players.
Well, Zach, I mean, I will have to, I'd be remiss not to mention anything about me being in PlayStation FIFA 2003. So we're going back a little bit, but the graphics alone are, I mean, there's no way you could tell it was me out there on the field back then when you were playing on FIFA. But now they emulate exactly what these players, their movements, and what goes into the games in terms of, like, designing, you know, them on the field. I mean, it's like you're watching a real World Cup game.
It really is.
When you're playing that. So, but to go along with what you were saying, you know, I think there are, from a tactical standpoint, you can really, you know, go even deeper into those games. It's not like you're just playing one of your buddies. If you're a coach or you want to, you know, you're playing with your kid, you can really pick the team you want and the formation and, you know, working on set pieces. So there's so many different areas within the game.
Yeah, and it's really like we're talking about, very true to form, where the weight of the passes, you can do, you know, wall passes, through balls,
penalty shots.
Just everything. It really is quite incredible. I think the reason I do want to make sure that people know that video games can be useful is we live in a video game age, this day and age. You know, kids are more overweight than they've ever been, and it's obviously something that we know Michelle Obama's really pushed for with the obesity and lowering that and getting kids fitness. But there's definitely a value within the video games from a soccer knowledgeable standpoint. I remember growing up, I was a sports nerd all along, and I learned players' stats and an appreciation for certain players through playing, you know, the basketball video games or the baseball video games or the football ones. There wasn't really any good soccer ones until FIFA really stepped its game up. And you know, Pro Evolution Soccer exists, and the game engine might be a little bit better, but the interplay, you know, the whole idea of creating beyond just the field, you know, the manager. You can manage the club. You can manage its finances. I mean, it's a really educational tool
Yeah. If
it's used the proper way. And, you know, I did want to talk a little bit about this. I knew that you had been in a video game, and I am glad you jumped in on it.
So you baited me in on that.
I did. Yeah. I did. The only time I was in a video game was when I created the player, and you know, 6 feet 180 just doesn't really show up too well. And a soccer video game, especially the basketball ones, when you did the create a player, was terrible. You know, I almost looked like I had an eating disorder out there. But anyway, hey, what was your player rating? Do you remember? Is that something that stays with you?
No, you know what? I think it was average.
But because you got a number to it, like 67, 77, 87.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I think it was like in that 40, 50.
No way.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So you had like the worst in the middle and then the high, I think was like, unless that was high, unless I'm giving myself
a
couple more.
Well, I know it works on the basic rating scale of like 99 is like Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right.
You couldn't have been 45.
At one of the years I was up there. Yeah. That was when I was playing a lot with Colorado. I think some of these other teams, maybe it went down a little bit. But, hey, that's the nature of the beast.
I guess so. To segue into the next part of the conversation, well, the World Cup has come to a conclusion. It's now preseason training for the European clubs. And while Major League Soccer might be in the middle of its season, the European clubs are here stateside again doing their North American tour. And we had just last night, by the way, we're taping this on the 24th of July, a Thursday. Just last night, we had Manchester United and the Los Angeles Galaxy. Manchester United has a new coach, and he was the coach of the Dutch national team. I can't pronounce his name, but if you got it?
I can't either, but I saw a picture of him with David Beckham
okay.
in L.A. So that's that's enough. That's good enough.
But Man U destroyed the Galaxy 7-0. I mean, typically these teams aren't playing at full speed. It's their exhibition season, especially the European clubs, the Major League Soccer clubs. Again, even on their best day, they're not beating these teams, so to speak. But 7-0 is still pretty sizable. And the big shift I read about this morning was he's taken the typical Manchester United system of 4-4-2, 4-3-3, and thrown it out the window. And they're going 3-5-2. And even Bruce Arena, the LA Galaxy coach, said it almost felt like a 3-4-3 out there. So let's talk about, you know, again, tactics and formation and how much that can impact a team. And we can use Man U as the example right now.
That's pretty interesting, that 7-0. I mean, that's still a big margin right there. That's kind of like the Brazil score.
Yes.
So without the one goal.
Yeah, Brazil, Germany, the semis. Yep.
We were trying to get rid of it. We're trying to let that go to the wayside, the World Cup, but it's tempting to jump back in there. Yeah, I mean, who knows who they had there for. You're always questioning, like, players and who weren't playing and if the Galaxy had their first string out there. Not that that would have made a big difference, but to see him getting results already, even against a team like the Galaxy, I mean, you know, that says something, you know, starting off. In terms of formation, I mean, I really think this guy's coming in with the mindset like he's just going to completely revamp from a formation standpoint, not necessarily personnel. But because what they've been doing in the past just hasn't been working. Unless you have Ferguson in there still, you know, I don't think somebody else can come in and fill those shoes like he has. And that was pretty evident last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, to jump on that, poor David Moyes, you know, you never want to be the guy who follows the legend. You know, in the case of Ferguson, you want to be the guy who follows the guy who follows the legend. And that's what we have now. Just a great first game for Man U with its new manager. I'm looking up the name, so you know we get that Louis van Gaal, Louis van Gaal.
There we go.
And if I'm butchering that, you know, hopefully my close friend is a big Dutch fan. You know, won't hurt me the next time I see him. Speaking of close friends, this week our podcast features our first ever guest. The co-founder of Sidekick Soccer Academy, Jesse Van, will be on later to discuss everything soccer and someone who clearly loves English soccer. So that'll be a treat for you later on, and we'll talk with him. So we've got the stateside tour. I think this is great for Major League Soccer, for American soccer fans. We spoke about, you know, how does the American soccer fan stay engaged past the World Cup? Because we know the MLS games just aren't up to that standard. Not many leagues really are, aside from Spain and England and, you know, a few others. So how do we keep them engaged? Well, let's bring at least the you know, some of the World Cup stars playing for their club teams. Even like you said, even if they're playing at half speed, it's still there's that technical element that is special to watch. So I know we have Tottenham stateside.
I think Arsenal's playing the Red Bulls this Friday or Saturday.
Yep, Arsenal's playing New York. And even last night, they weren't playing an MLS team, but here in Boston at Fenway Park, we had AS Roma versus Liverpool.
That was last night?
That was last night.
Oh, wow.
Hey, you're sitting here in the studio wearing a Roma hat.
You're exactly right. Maybe that was subconsciously I knew they were here, but that's unbelievable.
Now,
who won that game?
It was 1-0. I couldn't tell you. I'll look that up as well. But what I heard is that, unfortunately, the fans didn't win that game. The Facebook feeds and the Twitter feeds, and even talking to some people who went to the game, it was not the prettiest brand of soccer.
Really?
To come stateside. And
that's too bad.
It's too bad. It's one thing if you hear like a novice soccer fan, like, that's why I don't like soccer.
Yeah.
It was some soccer professionals going, that was as boring as paint drying. And that was... a little disheartening to hear. I don't know if it's because of the surface. I don't know if it's because, you know, Roma isn't as good as it was when they had Bradley a few years ago. Liverpool, you know, Suarez is sitting out, and he got traded anyway. Or
Bradley's no longer with them. I was just thinking.
Unfortunately, not the greatest night for American soccer here in Boston, or at least the American soccer fan, but we'll see what happens going forward.
Yeah.
Now, have you been to one of the games at Fenway? I personally haven't.
I have not.
I don't know what the atmosphere is like.
I have not. I think one of the ones a few years ago, who was that played there? Was it Liverpool? Or
it's always Liverpool because the Red Sox owners own Liverpool.
But there was a Scottish team, I want to say. I think it might have been Celtic.
Celtic, yes.
Celtic was here. I've heard, you know, guys that went to the game, but I didn't get much feedback for any of those games. So I don't know if it's the venue, maybe, or...
I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I've actually been to Fenway for something aside from a baseball game and aside from a Dave Matthews Band concert, which seems to happen every year there, or Paul McCartney or some other, you know...
Justin Timberlake.
White rock star, you know.
I saw him there.
Although, yeah, I think we had Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake
last year.
That's
the one I was at, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you go for Timberlake or Jay-Z?
I'm right down the middle. It's 50-50 on both of those guys.
If it was Jay-Z or Beyonce?
I probably would have got backstage passes for that one.
Okay. I actually was able to see the Frozen Fenway when they had the NHL All-Star Classic and the Boston University, Boston College NHL All-Star Classic. And, it's just Fenway Park is the cathedral of Boston, you know, and it's... It's really cool to see different kinds of events happen there. I'm sure at some point soon, if not next year, you know, we'll get out there to see the Fenway football, as I like to call it. And, I hope it's a better game next year. It sounds like we didn't miss much this year.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, if from a player's perspective, right, and playing at the highest level, it's you know, these foreigners come over here and it's early in their preseason and they're playing. Some of their players just got done with the World Cup and it's like they're still coming down from that high. So I think there's something to be said about no matter where you're playing, what the venue is, the mindset of these players is very, very low.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, they know they got a long time to get fit. They're kind of enjoying themselves. You know, it's kind of like a vacation to a certain extent. Although they're, you know, passionate about what they're doing, it's their jobs, their livelihood. But at the end of the day, it's they know they're playing in Fenway. Probably, maybe it won't ever happen again that they're able to travel over here and play. So they're living it up, having a good time.
Yeah. For the record, Roma won in the 90th minute against Liverpool last night. Again, the results don't matter because it's preseason exhibition soccer, but it just so we have factual basis. Now, you obviously, again, we know you played Major League Soccer. You won a championship in Major League Soccer. You've probably been able to do some of these preseason tours and things like that. What are some of the experiences you remember? And, you know, you spoke about going half speed and getting yourself in shape and things like that. Talk a little bit more about that experience for our fan base.
Yeah, I think a couple of places we went with DC United. I think we might have gone to Bermuda, I think I was telling you, for part of our preseason. So pretty unfortunate in that aspect.
Beautiful place. You
know,
oh.
And, you know, we where else did we go? I was with the Galaxy for a little bit since we're talking about them, and we went to travel to Portugal, I think, for part of our preseason. So
where in Portugal?
I think it was La Manga was the name of the place.
Mm.
And it's like an island, so... They don't mess around when they travel abroad. You know, it's they treat you right. So, but in terms of like from a playing standpoint, you know, a lot of times these teams are going places where the climate's going to be a lot warmer, and they're trying to get you know whether it's in Florida or overseas, so you can get in the best shape. And that's really kind of the focal point. is getting the best shape, and then the rest of the stuff will kind of fall into place, the team and the formation and all that. So
yeah, I remember, must have been, we're in 2014 now. I think it was 2012 that Jay Heaps took over as the Revolution head coach, the New England Revolution head coach. And they went down to Arizona for preseason. And they had a great preseason. I think they were blanking some teams, and hopes were high and things like that. Had a very young squad with Diego Fagundes and Kellen Rowe, the draft pick. And it seemed to have got them off on a pretty good start. They finished out, as we know, last year, Matt Reese's last hurrah. Outstanding. And obviously we're changing topics now to the Revolution. Matt Reese had a great last hurrah. And, you know, those 10 games, it was magical. That's the way he gets to go out. And then they start this year. Bobby Shuttleworth is the keeper. They start off again red hot. At one point, they were first place. The Seattle Sounders, they just absolutely destroyed in Clint Dempsey's return home, 5-0. But now they're on a 7-game losing streak. I think we've kind of lost sight of the Revolution with the World Cup happening. But what could be the cause of, I mean, how do you go from first place to a 7-game losing streak in soccer? I mean, this isn't like baseball where you're playing 162 games. Soccer, it's a 30-game season here in MLS. How does that happen?
Well, it just goes to show the parity within the league. Mm. I mean, it goes back to what we're talking about with the starting from the top, the U.S. team down. It's a trickle-down effect. And unfortunately, we're still at a point where you're not going to have the Manchesters at the top and the Liverpools and the top teams. You're going to have some teams at the top, and maybe they're like a DC United, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, last place last season, now they're climbing the top. So anything's possible, and like you said, it's not it, compared to other sports, it's not a long season in terms of number of games, but it is a long season for guys coming out of college, or, you know, the season is a lot, and you're playing those games, and it's a lot harder on the body. And so, I mean, really, it's just losing focus, because there's a lot of highs and lows in soccer. So, unfortunately, if you do have a younger team, they can kind of start off, and then they kind of die off if they don't keep that focus.
And they are a younger team. You've got Andrew Farrell, who was the number one pick last year. You got Kellen Rowe, the number three pick a few years ago. Diego Fagundes, who was their leading scorer last year, and he still isn't even 20 yet. So, I mean, their best players are still young. They did bring Shalry Joseph back, the captain, arguably the best player in Revolution history, but he's not really playing. I think he's more fading into his, you know, his either coaching career or after playing career. And yeah, sounds like it could be a matter of losing focus. I know Josie Gonzalez, who was the MLS Defender of the Year last year, the Portuguese international, he's been battling some injuries. And again, Shuttleworth for Reese, I mean, Shuttleworth seems like a quality keeper, technically good, but I mean, Matt Reese was an MLS legend. You know, when there's an MLS, when they one day make the MLS Hall of Fame, he's probably going in.
That's kind of like the Ferguson analogy, you know, Moyes coming in, filling those. Same thing with Shuttleworth. He's got to fill those some big shoes. So, I mean, you'll see the top five teams that make it to the playoffs with the MLS, and then you'll see a big drop-off. That'll be pretty close, and then you'll see a huge drop-off with points. So there's still that gap and that consistency that we're lacking in U.S. soccer.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about the legacy team, so to speak, in Major League Soccer, you think probably DC United. You know, who obviously started off the league in the 90s winning, was it 4 championships in 6 years or something like that? Yeah, the LA Galaxy, obviously, when Beckham came to town, and they had a little bit of a run. They still have Donovan. They still have Roy Keane.
Even before that, even before Beckham came. I mean, they were great. Cienfuegos and all those guys.
You know, New York Red Bulls, because they got Henry, and, you know, they've got a nice little fan base there in New York. And that's your league, right, in terms of who would
major
like...
Major cities.
Who would outside of the country know, you know, what the teams are? So, and even them, as we speak about them, none of them have been perennially, hey, we know they're going to the playoffs every year, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, you look at New York, they used to be, a few years back, they used to be one of the bottom teams at the table. But we're getting money in now, where these teams are bringing in good players. And now you can start to see that a little bit more. Bigger players are coming over here, so... You're not going to just put them all on one team. So LA got somebody, and New York got somebody, Seattle, Toronto. So before you know it, these teams are going to have dominant players for each team. I think it's going to you're going to see it balance out a little bit more.
And attracting players, you know, I think it's like any sport. You know, why don't players really want to come to the Celtics? Well, it can't be because of winning tradition, because they're the best team ever. A lot of it has to do with the weather, you know. Here in New England, not only do we not have the best weather, and we don't really seem to attract great free agents here with the Revolution, unfortunately, you also don't have the great stadium experience. So we're hoping the local team will, you know, obviously bounce back this season. And I think we're also, and we've been talking about this for a few years now, it's almost like a broken record. Hey, let's get a new stadium here. You know, let's get that in the city of Boston somewhere, and let's start getting a great experience for the fans and, you know, really taking care of Massachusetts soccer, you know, and getting a little bit better. So anyway, to change topics, with us is Jesse Van, co-founder of Sidekick Soccer Academy, a very close friend, one of the best human beings I know on the planet. Jesse, how you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you for that introduction.
So Jesse is living in paradise these days, the U.S. Virgin Islands, St. John's, an island of 2,000 bright, shiny faces as a population, correct?
Yes. Someone has to live this life, so I decided to do it.
Yeah, and we like it in January when it's 2,001 bright, shining faces, and that's my shining face getting my pale skin a suntan. Speaking of pale skins, you are an English-American dual citizen. Talk to us about your love of English soccer. I think everyone would like to know what it's like, the pain and misery that it is to be an English soccer fan.
Oh, man, it's a tough time period to be asking you that question. But, yeah, I mean, I kind of, even though I grew up in America mostly, I spent a lot of time in England, and I actually consider myself more British, obviously, when it comes to football or soccer. I mean, I've grown up around the love of the game over there. Obviously, supporting the English national team, I love the USA team, but they definitely come second to England when I'm supporting, just how I was brought up. But in regards to this recent World Cup, obviously, that was kind of embarrassing, but I've grown to not expect anything from England. I remember, what was it, in the Euros? I mean, England has cost me emotionally more times than I can count, so honestly, I was numb to them going into the World Cup and had no expectations, so it was nice to see the U.S. kind of go for it in that regard. So I definitely, going into the tournament, I had more hopes for the U.S., and obviously it turned out that way, so my predictions were right.
Well, what is the real problems with English soccer? Why haven't they been so successful? They have the best, you know, professional league in the world, correct?
Yeah, I guess I consider it that, but if you look at the Premier League and you actually look at the amount of English players that it has, it's actually pretty low. I mean, a lot of the foreigners do make up the Premier League and make it what it is. But to compare something like Germany and England, a lot of it has to do with the youth program, but to me, most of it is tactics, coaching, and mentality, which is, you know, a lot that I've learned throughout the years is the mental part of the game is almost as important as the physical. So when you go into, obviously, conditioning is the one thing that you want to start out with, which England did okay, but when you saw them play Italy in the Nous in the rainforest there, which was the toughest venue of the whole World Cup, you saw England fade, hence why they lost that game 2-1. You kind of saw their fitness fade. Maybe that is in part to the Premier League. Maybe they had, you know, they play Champions League. They play every game in the Premier League is a battle. So after a long season, these guys are going straight to the World Cup, and you can only imagine the toll that it's taken on their bodies. But along those lines, most of the other players, you know, in the World Cup have gone through the same thing. So you can't really have any excuses. But if I had to pin it down to one thing, particularly this World Cup, I would say tactically we got it wrong, and mentally the players were not prepared.
So just in shambles altogether. Speaking of English teams and shambles, I hate to bring it up this way and segue this way, but, you know, I feel I can do this, and you know it's out of love. Wolverhampton. Wolverhampton, for those who don't know, or a little bit more insight into Sidekick's origins. If you look at our logo, the hexagon logo and the orange, black, and white color scheme, it's clearly a tribute to your favorite English club. I'd like to say English Premier League club, but it's been a few years since that happened. Tell us a little bit about, you know, being a passionate fan of a team and you know what it's like to go through the ups, through the downs, And you know, obviously it's down these days, but you know, what can we learn about being a passionate fan from you and through Wolverhampton?
Well, let me first start out by saying that the Wolves got promoted this year, so
back to the championship. Wow, that, for those who don't know, that's the second division in England. They fell so far, they fell down to the third division. But hey, yeah, keep making that comeback.
Yeah, we're on the roll. We're on the roll. We'll be in the Premier League, maybe not this year, but the next. But yeah, that's part of being a supporter, and that's, you know, that's kind of. Obviously, Sidekick and the Wolves, I like having them mesh. You know, obviously, as one of my best friends, that you know how strongly I feel about the Wolves and why we incorporated into Sidekick. But a good analogy, I would say, is, and to kind of give you some background on the Wolves, is basically that's like my family's team. I grew up going to those games, and I can't even describe to you the atmosphere of those games and just the passion that's involved from being a fan, from being just involved in the city. You know, in America, I've never felt anything like that. And I'm an avid, obviously I grew up in Baltimore, so I'm an avid Ravens fan, Orioles fan, and I love sports across the board. But I've never felt energy or passion for a sport or a team like I do for the Wolves. You know, like, that is by far the greatest passion I have for a sport. And to me, being a true fan, you know, you go through the highs and lows as everything. You know, your team, it's not like you're jumping on a bandwagon where you see a lot of these popular teams, whether it's, you know, Manchester United or Boston Red Sox or the top teams at the time. You know, they obviously generally have a bigger fan base because of they're going through the wins. And it's the same thing in life. It's very easy to be with someone when they're on the high and they're doing good and you know, everything's going their way. But the real challenge is being with something when it's on the low. And when they're losing, and that's what I love about my team, is that I've been there from the highs. We got promoted, being in the Premier League. You know, we escaped relegation for a couple of years, and obviously it caught up to us. The lows to
today.
Being the first team,
the lows of today,
been around from getting relegated, then getting relegated in the championship. So
yep, I got you.
It's a roller coaster, but.
Hey, it's ride it, baby. It's it can only go up these days. It can only go up these days. now you talked about being from Baltimore. You grew up. I know you played in the Maryland ODP system. You know, we got Jason Moore with us. Jason was the a DC United player. Do you remember him playing? I guess we would have been. We're the same age. We would have been about 15, 16 when Jason was the number one pick and raised the trophy. Do you have memories of DC United growing up?
Yeah, I must do, because I played with Santino Colata, and he was basically one. At the time, he was the youngest player to get drafted. He got drafted to like our arch rival. I went to Loyola High School, and we played Curly all the time, and he was obviously one of their top players. But he got drafted when he was a sophomore, so that would have been around the time that Jason was. They must have played together at the same time. So yeah, I know his name from, because obviously I kept tabs when Santino went there, and obviously being the local team, DC United, you know, that's huge, and to have it come full circle back to Sidekick, it's a small world like that, so it's funny how it all happened.
So you were one of the ones cheering him on. What were you guys playing, RFK Stadium, Jason?
Yeah, it was RFK.
Yeah.
Yes, and is it still there? Are they still using RFK?
They are. I think they're looking at building the stadium now, aren't they, Jesse?
I would think so. That stadium has been around for a while. I remember being in there for the 94 World Cup, and it was still shambles then. So hopefully, I think it's time for an upgrade.
Yeah, you know, aside from the Revolution that I knew of, DC United must be one of the last teams without its own soccer stadium. So, yeah, let's hope that you know, they come full circle sooner than later. As we close out here, I do want to talk to you about, you know, you have – just a unique perspective on life and just a huge heart, and you really care about things from the core. And that's why, you know, you and I co-founding Sidekick together is something that I'm just honored to be a part of with you. And one of the things you wrote was One Love, One Game, which is available for sale on our website. And I mean, talk a little bit about that book, about the process, and why, you know, that's how you wanted to publish your first story.
Basically, that came out of something that I've always wanted to do. And I kind of refer to it as the textbook I never had. And it is it's an evolution. That's the first part in a couple of things that I plan on writing. But to me, it was the perfect start. It's short, simple, and right to the point. And simplicity is overrated, or underrated, I should say. It's basically how I kind of, I view the game, I view life. I think people overcomplicate things, and they have a tendency to overthink a lot, especially when it comes to sport. So not only does that book kind of deal with simplicity, but it also kind of dives into the mental aspect of the game. And it really talks more on how to relate the sport to your everyday life and just more of how to carry yourself, whether it's your job, whether it's playing. It's just some, it's all to do with the aspect of your personality and bringing your character to everything you do. And I think that when you play the game, you should be playing it true to yourself. And I think that if you are successful and you really feel the flow of the game and you're feeling on top of it, it's when you're true to yourself. So that means you're playing to your strengths, you're playing the game that you want to play. And really, if you read the book, it breaks the game down into very simple steps. But once you start seeing the game in simpler steps and, you know, you don't overthink or try to overcomplicate the game, that's really the beauty of soccer. It's a ball and two goals. You can play it anywhere. And it also has to do with being one with the 10 people that you're playing with. So, you know, obviously the book has a lot of deeper undertones than that. But I would say to sum that book up, it's basically just a simple love and the way to be true to yourself throughout whatever you do. And I relate it to soccer, obviously. I'm very heavy into philosophy. So I like merging it with sport. And that's basically what I chose to do with that book, and I'm happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah, and it's a great book, and I've read it once, and I'll probably read it again before the summer's over. You're the best, man. I love you. I can't wait to see you again. And I know you're in Paradise, but you might want to start playing a little bit more FIFA so that the next time I come down there, it's not as big a whooping as it was last time.
I know. I gotta find some time to practice.
Well, tell your beautiful bride that I said hello, and you keep living the dream, baby. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, later, guys.
Thanks,
have a
Jesse.
Great night.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the good guys. So, done a little research into your FIFA rating from 2003, and you were not a 45 or a 50, Jason. You were actually a 70, which is a pretty good score. Listed as a right midfielder for the Chicago Fire. My favorites are you're 7 across the board for fitness, speed, shot, pass, header. I believe it's bicycling. I don't know why that's a stat. I could be interpreting that wrong. But an 8 in strength on your shot or strike of your shot, I should say, and an 8 in tackling. So both hitting the ball hard, you know, both defensively and offensively.
Let's say 2018 is looking good for me.
Yeah.
Here I come, Russia.
Jesse's got that dual English-American citizenship. Could you play for another team, or did you already give up your U.S. National team status? I know you're going to be way past the prime, but, you know, American Samoa, maybe you could play for them.
Rongan's already put in a call to me. He thinks I might be a little bit overly qualified after these stats.
Yeah. In comparison, some other players from that team, and this is a very good...
What a great team that was, huh? Looking at the roster.
Very good Chicago Fire team. I remember C.J. Brown, center back, 72. Carlos Bocanegra, who became the U.S. national team captain, was a 71. Peter Novak, who I think was the Polish national team captain, 73. Antti Razov was a very good striker. Krzysztof Stoichkov, very good striker. Those guys are at 71 and 69, respectively. Josh Wolf, who was a striker for the American national team, 73. And a very young DeMarcus Beasley. He's been playing that high a level for that long, but very young at the time, only a 59. So you just dominated him in the FIFA rankings. And, you know, looking at this team, I remember a lot of these names. Obviously, a lot of these guys went on to great things. You were a great player yourself. And
Bob Bradley, the coach.
Bob Bradley.
Michael Bradley now.
Oh, my God. How did you not win the title that year?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happened with that. I think we made it to the playoffs. We made it pretty far, but then we got beat.
Wow. Colorado Rapids had Carlos Valderrama, just a 63, so he was at the end of his career. Kyle Beckerman was just entering MLS, 62. This is outstanding, by the way. I don't know how I found this on Google, but we found it. Anyone who's a real American soccer fan, we talked about these people last week. These names should ring a bell. Brian McBride, very young at the time, only at 59. Edson Buttle, a 60. Eddie Pope, a 42 for DC United. So I guess he was at the tail end. He was a great center back. Did you get to play with Eddie?
Yeah, he was on the team in 99 with DC.
American national team player. Jaime Moreno, a 59 at the time. Marco Echeverri, possibly my favorite.
He's probably the best player I've ever played with.
My favorite Major League Soccer player growing up.
Him and Valderrama.
Just, and the best mullet of all time.
Yeah.
Just.
Oh, it's flowing. It was flowing. It would just, it was beautiful to see up close and personal.
He was a lefty. I was told by a close friend of mine who's down in DC, living now, very heavily involved in like the men's soccer community, you know, like the Weekend Warrior type stuff, that Echeverri was just in town, had just retired, and they got Echeverri to come into like an indoor soccer game, and his team was down like 10-0. He put on a penny. He didn't move past like the center circle in the indoor soccer. I think it was with boards. And Marco, I think, assisted on like 16 straight goals or something. And it was just like 2-3 touches, float the ball and things like that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And he was doing that at the MLS level.
Oh, yeah. He was the true number 10.
Oh, I love him.
You even have Ben Olsen on that DC team, who's the coach now.
That's right. 69 at the time.
Roy Lasseter, the goal scorer.
70.
Of all time.
Yep. Roy Lasseter's a great player. I remember him and the current Revolution GM, Mike Burns, actually getting into it during an MLS game. This is one of my favorite childhood memories. This is when you really start to appreciate the game, about 14, 15. You're at Foxborough Stadium, the old Foxborough Stadium. And these are things you don't see on TV. And this is why, take your kids to quality soccer games, even if it is the Revolution. Take them to a quality soccer game. They're going to see things they can't see on TV. And the whole time you're watching Burns and Lasseter just battle. And I was a pretty affluent, knowledgeable fan at the time, I felt. I had, like, the autographs, and I was a big soccer nerd. And I remember seeing these two guys. I'm like, aren't they on the national team together? And they're just, like, doing little cheap shots from behind. And I think they both got yellow cards on one play. So, fun stuff. And I think at the end of the day, they just shook hands, you know, exchanged jerseys.
Leave it all on the field, right?
Leave it. You know, when you're a competitor, that's what it should be about. You know,
right,
that's what
exactly
it should be about.
Yeah.
And I guess let's transition. You know, I could look at these ratings all day. This is outstanding.
It's interesting to look at some of the players, the ones that are still around and have gone on.
Tony Miola, yeah. Preki, Mike Burns on the Kansas City Wizards, back when they were the Wizards. The Galaxy had Alexi Lalas, Matt Reese.
Well, that's another
Kobe
team.
Jones.
That's another team we were talking, you know, like a New York Red Bulls that were in last place back in the day, Kansas City.
How about Tim Howard with a 56?
Tim Howard.
A young Tim Howard. Tab Ramos, who's now a very influential person in the U.S. Youth soccer system, with a 68 at the end of his career there.
Clint Mathis.
Man, this is...
And it's pretty cool to see, huh? I got to look back over that and refresh my memory.
They actually have... Jay Heaps, who's the current coach of the Revolution, is listed as Joe Heaps. So that tells you how prominent he was at the time, with a 59. Taylor Twellman with a 62.
You know the interesting thing, with a fact with me and Heaps.
Landon Donovan, a 71.
He came out the same draft year.
That's it.
I came out one, and Heaps came out two.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know.
That's a true fact for our show tonight.
Wow.
Take that home, everyone.
Take home. And you hear, you thought you had a 45 rating in FIFA, and it was a 70.
Learn something new every day.
Anyway. But no, I think to go from, you know, talking about my little Mike Burns, Roy Lasseter, you know, one-on-one battle within the professional rank story. So, you know, done a soccer clinic all week, as you and I do. We're 7 days a week either coaching soccer or doing administration with soccer or talking, you know, into a microphone about soccer. It's all relative. So I've got these two, I think, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, and they're at the age now where someone's taught them how to shield the ball. You know, someone's taught them how to use their arms to protect the ball. And the one kid who hasn't been taught yet is the one going, "That's a foul." Well, no, it's not. You know, and I try to explain to them as gently as I can in my Boston accent, "That's just soccer. You know, that's the way the game is, you know." And you say it gentle because they're 9 years old, but really, it's a tough physical game. Whoever told you it was, you know, not because you can't kick somebody or you can't, like, elbows, No, it gets really, really physical. And it's important they learn that at a young age. One of my favorite things to teach is defending and shielding, because you could have limited athleticism, limited mobility in your range of motion. But if you can shield, if you can defend, you can play for anybody. Someone will find a spot for you on the field, you know, and even at that young age, they should learn how physical the game can be.
Yeah, protecting the ball. I mean, if you don't know how to shield the ball, and you're going to lose the ball, and your team's going to get frustrated, the players around you. So that the differentiation between, or to be able to differentiate that at a young age, and a coach be able to teach that, and the child actually comprehend it, that, you know, they see these players now like Messi and those guys and Robin for in the World Cup diving, you know, all the time. So they're thinking, you know, these kids are growing up to be kind of like that, that have that prima donna mentality, and you take a dive here and there, and when you barely get knocked, you kind of, hey, that's a foul. So it's kind of going back to the old way of teaching and thinking that, you know, you stick your elbow out, it's more blatant, that's going to be a foul, but you want to shield shoulder to shoulder, it's fine. And, you know, you either A, maybe you're not in the weight room and you get knocked around a little bit more, or you need to get in the weight room.
Yeah.
And that's just a whole nother dynamic. And but the kids that aren't even that strong just know how to use their body and position themselves between the player and the defender and the ball. And that way it's going to make it a lot more difficult for them to get to it.
The little intricacies of the game, you know, and you said shoulder-to-shoulder challenges and using your forearm for leverage and not extending the forearm. That's the difference between the foul and, you know, just the smart soccer play. And my big advice to youth soccer coaches, the U6s, the U8s, teach them the rules. I honestly think that every single coach should go get either a referee license or go to a referee course. Because if you don't know the rules of the game, A, you shouldn't be yelling at a referee if they make a bad call, because guess what? They are educated in the game. And B, how do you teach your players to play by the rules? And yeah, as they get more older, manipulate the rules, mm-hmm. because you have to. That the game is beautiful because we have standards in place, but yeah, you need to know what the standards are. You need to know them definitively. If you're shaky on your knowledge of things that don't change, and that's the rules, they don't change. The weather can change. The size of the pitch can change. The, you know, how well the ball is pumped up can change, especially on certain days. But if you don't know the rules, which don't, hey man, you know, what are you really doing? You're not teaching the game. You got to know it.
That was one of the most frustrating things when I started my academy 3 years ago. And the reality is soccer is starting at the town level and working its way up to club and to so on and so forth. So when I started to see some of these towns that don't even, you know, the coaches or parents, and nothing against them because it's fun to get out there with your kid and everything. But
and you know, without them, they're the lifeblood of soccer and very appreciative.
Exactly.
But anytime you do anything, volunteer or not, really dedicate yourself to it.
Yeah. And a lot of these, and what they're trying to implement now is they're requiring at least a basic license for some of these coaches out of fairness to the kids. Because, I mean, it's fun out there. You have your dad's coaching and everything, but that's not really the productivity of where soccer is going. It needs to go. Granted, it's town soccer, so there's that fine line between mm-hmm. Making it competitive and also it's everybody comes and plays. There's a fine line, but at the same time, you're doing a disservice to these kids if they don't know how to throw in the ball without lifting both of their feet or jumping up in the air. And I used to see, you know, you'd have maybe the one coach that knows what he's doing, and then you'd have, you know, the other four or five saying, oh, just play, let them play. And these kids are just getting in bad habits. They're being taught the wrong thing. So you're really jeopardizing their career, their futures playing soccer, because they go to the next level and people are making fun of them. And they don't know, and then they have no clue. So it's got to be frustrating for kids that really love the game, and getting them to stay and play. Nobody wants to play a game when you don't know the rules and you're getting beat. That's one way to retain the kids and have them go on and not go to other sports, when they actually understand the rules and they can really compete at a higher level.
Yep, and again, the passion is something that you can teach, and knowing the little intricacies is how the game becomes really, really fun. And yeah, play a video game. You know, we talked about at the beginning, play a video game and educate yourself. And it's a fun way to learn. And, you know, I think you and I, we're now out of our playing careers. Every once in a while, we'll get out there and, you know, play pickup or play in one of these little leagues and stuff. But we're never going to have fans chanting our name or things like that again. That's fine. That's cool.
Those days are over.
They're fine. But, yeah, you do need to have a little bit of a competitive spirit within you. And what's wrong with, you know, a video game being that competitive spirit? I gave Jesse a little bit of, a trash talk, you know, and that's what it's fun. It's fun competitiveness, and that should never ever go away. Whenever you keep track of a score, you know, again, sometimes a score is dictated by skill, sometimes it's dictated by luck, but, you know, if you did your best, that's what any game is about, and that's what soccer is about. So, hey, what another great time here with you on Off the Woodwork. We got into a little bit more of the philosophical ways about soccer. You lied about your FIFA rating, so we went and did a fact check. It's great to have the stateside soccer tour happening. If there's a game on ESPN, catch it. You know, go on ESPN.com, find out when Tottenham's playing, find out when Arsenal's playing. They're not going to be coming around stateside too often. Go to a game. Take your kids. You know, this is the time to go.
Educate yourself on the game.
Yep.
It's a great time to do that in U.S. soccer.
Yep. And, hey, go get FIFA 14 and get ready for FIFA 15 in the fall. We will be back next week. Enjoy your week and keep kicking.